The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, I am always interested in what's happening in Denmark because they elected a centre-left government, but they're behaving quite the opposite. This week, women in Denmark will now be required to register for potential military conscription. The decision comes after a law was passed by the Danish Parliament in 2023 to increase the size of their military in the light of Russia's invasion to Ukraine. So it's been extended from men only to men and women. Will this policy be replicated in other countries as they ramp up their defence options and security options? Well, to discuss this and lots more, it's a great pleasure to welcome back to the PK Show Patrick Burry, Senior Security Lecturer at the University of Bath, former NATO analyst and army officer. Welcome to the show, Patrick. What's happening in Denmark?
Well, it's quite interesting, Ivan. It's essentially, as you said, the parliament now is changing the rules for conscription, whereas before all male adults had to sign up for potential military conscription, give their details and then be assessed. That's been extended now to females, and females used to only have to be required to serve voluntarily. And about 24% or so of the Danish conscripts were females, but this is obviously, I would say, designed to bring that up a bit higher and certainly allow the Danes to have data on a wider pool of young people should they need it for military service. So, I mean, this is part, Ivan, of a wider change going on across especially Eastern Europe. You know, since 2014, you've had the Swedes, Latvia, Lithuania reintroduce conscription. Germany is also considering it. Denmark and Norway have increased their intakes of conscripts. You've had other countries closer to home like France and the UK. With the UK mooted, hasn't gone anywhere so far yet. And France has introduced a limited national service and civic volunteering program. So the direction of travel is towards that, you know, the end of what we call the all-volunteer force in Eastern Europe in particular.
And when you say conscription, it's anathema here. We have no culture of it. Is it for how long? How does it work? What if you, you know, go to these boot camps and you just don't measure up physically? How does it work, conscription?
So you're right, like the whole of the island of Ireland, you know, including the North, has never had conscription either in World War One or World War Two. So it's very different to what we are used to, which is the all-volunteer force. But the risk, you know, when you've got in the news repeatedly just how degraded the defence forces are, the risk of the duty of citizenship to be able to defend a nation state does actually increase if you've got a smaller, incapable defence force. So, you know, it's totally out of the woods. It's a low probability outcome. But, you know, that the cost of the protecting communities and the nation is shouldered by all of us. So watch this space.
In terms of
actually how it works, Norway's a great example, right? So they've got a pretty good social cohesion and understanding of the threat from Russia there. And what they do is at 18 in the final year of school, everybody takes a survey about their propensity to serve, so their motivation to serve. And then the military sift through those, basically pick out the highest scorers, and then they're brought forward for further tests. Yeah. But in Norway, it's like getting into JP Morgan, being called into the armed forces. It's got a lot of social kudos and very good in terms of future career, whether you stay in or not. A lot of people do actually stay in. So because it's got that social kudos and good networking opportunities, it's highly desirable. And therefore, they're able to take really good recruits who then either stay in or go back with positive views of the armed forces. Whether they stay in for, I think off the top of my head, like Norway might be 18 months at the moment. But what you see is not only are they increasing the intakes, they're increasing the amount of time. So say if it used to be 4 months, some countries' service was, now it's now 11, I think, in the case of Denmark. They've extended it, for example. So, essentially, you know, as the risk grows and the intelligence services assess, especially in that part of the world, that Russia could be a threat to them in a major way in 3 to 5 years, the burden on society as a whole is being shouldered by a broader group.
One of the things I noticed from recent conflicts, whether it was Israel, Iran, or the Ukraine war, was that the politics of body bags isn't good. And soldiers and boots on the ground seems to be a thing of the past. And it's all drone warfare. Would that be a reasonable observation as a military expert yourself and a strategic thinker in this area? Like, in terms of the obnoxious nature of and you see the pushback against Putin in this regard, in terms of the unpopularity for mothers and so on of victims of war. Are we moving to a kind of boots-free conflict in the future?
I don't think so. I think the opposite, actually. I think the wars in Ukraine, Israel and Gaza, and the heavy losses and the massive civilian casualties, especially in the latter there, the Ukrainian use of conscripts, the Russian use of conscripts, the Israeli use of conscripts. I mean, the direction of travel, unfortunately, Ivor. There's this high-tech tip of the spear kind of thing when drones are really important on the front line in Ukraine. And you're right about that. And they're helping people man the front lines with less people, etc., and targeting, getting into the targeting loops, etc. But ultimately, recent conflicts actually show that, especially in wars, that you could, for Ukraine, it's not a war of choice, it's a war of survival, where the national community is mobilized and feels that it's at risk. The appetite, and I think that kind of body bag, the CNN effect, we used to call it, about those American soldiers, do you remember, killed in Somalia, and then US President Bill Clinton pulled them out, the Black Hawk Down crisis. That was known as the CNN effect. I think that's gone, really, in many respects. How long it was there, you've got to remember that the Americans took about 7,000 casualties dead in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it didn't really change the policy either. So, I think, unfortunately, the trajectory that we're on at the moment is back to this mass, highly lethal state-on-state conventional warfare, of which, there's a tech tip, but it's backed up by resilience, which can only be provided by societies.
The other security question I wanted to ask you, further to the recent NATO summit, was this 5% GDP target of expenditure. It's all BS. Like, the States is only spending 3.4. There was wailing and gnashing in Europe to get to 2% with the 800 billion. Like, there's no way most member states in Europe can afford 5%. Now, I know it's 2035, but, is there a level of unreality about this? Look, we'll say it to keep Trump happy, but it's an aspiration rather than a real target.
Yeah, I mean, the headline there from the NATO summit was they just basically had to say what they had to say to keep Trump in, because in the next 5 years, Europe's just not ready to take on Russia on its own. Which is basically what the US wants, because it feels it has to deal with China. So they had to keep them in by hook or by crook. So pledging to 5%. If you look then into, if you drill into it, it was actually 3.5% on core defense spending, and 1.5% on security and resilience. So, for in the UK's case, it's already spending almost 1.5% on, security and resilience, and it's going to hit, what is it? It's 2.5% at the moment. So it has to hit another percent in 10 years. I mean, that's doable.
So what is that resilience? But is it cybersecurity or something like that?
The whole thing, like from the security services, in the UK's case, so MI5, MI6, GCHQ, then the whole counterterrorism architecture. It's just an accounting trick, essentially. You can work out where you draw the lines, and maybe NATO have decided where that is. But cybersecurity would, of course, be a part of that too.
But America themselves are only actually spending 3.4% at the
3.4% on core defense. Yeah, I'd say they spend well over the 5% when you put in the security architecture that goes in that, and the intelligence budget, etc. Definitely. It's mainly about optics, Ivan, and buying time. That was the takeaway. Europe needs that time, because if something happened in the short term and the US wasn't convinced about defending Europe, they'd find themselves in a pickle.
Okay, well, there you have it. Conscription being extended in Denmark and elsewhere to women. Patrick Burry, a senior security lecturer at the University of Bath and former NATO analyst and army officer, thank you for joining us on The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.